The Athletic.
Totally Football Show. Today, more World Cup teams are in. Ghana must go to Qatar. And Mo Salah beaming all over his face, but that was just the lasers before he skied his penalty and went out. Elsewhere, call him Hans Christian Eriksen. The Danish fairy tale continues. We talk return of the Premier League and the week's best game, courtesy of the Dames. Wednesday's incredible Clasico in the Women's Champions League. All that plus into Totally 2 in this Totally Football Show in association with Paddy Power. Thursday, 31st of March. Boom! Here with us, Duncan Alexander, Dan Bardell, and Carl Anker, and in the loneliest role of all, you, the listener. Hello to you all.
Hello.
Hello.
Right, there you go. Slight tremor of anticipation, of anxiety in Duncan's voice there, because he is in an Intertotally quarterfinal later on. Dan, lovely to have you back. It's been a while.
Yeah, didn't qualify for the tournament. Not qualified. Maybe next year.
Perhaps. Every young man's dream, of course, and woman's. And Carl, you've just been living the dream, he said, slipping along in a nice presently fashion. Just back from that Nigeria thing.
Oh, yes. That was an experience. On two different occasions, my nose was stinging due to tear gas, and I got quite impolitely prodded / jabbed by a policeman with a 2-foot stick trying to enter the national team stadium in Abuja.
Where did he prod you?
Right in the backpack, shall we say.
Oh. Anyway, we'll be hearing your report on that match. Thank goodness for away goals, A. But it is, of course, 234 days on this Thursday morning to the World Cup. The draw is only one day away. That's going to be happening Friday in Doha, I imagine. Yep,
yes.
Getting nods.
5 o'clock UK time.
Although it'll only feature 29 teams, is that right? Also nods. We've got 10 more teams that have booked their places since our last show. Portugal, Poland, Ghana, Senegal, Cameroon, Morocco and Tunisia, Mexico and USA, Ecuador, but still to be sorted, well, the last European spot, which will go to one of Wales, Scotland or Ukraine. We'll find out in June. Then you've got those playoffs. Australia versus United Arab Emirates for the right to take on Peru in Doha. And also Costa Rica against New Zealand in Doha. Woo! All right. Carl, you're up first with Nigeria 1, Ghana 1.
You're listening to the Totally Football Show, sponsored by Paddy Power and part of the Athletic Podcast Network.
The Tunisian centre referee have signalled the end of proceedings. The Black Stars of Ghana, over the hills and far away. Some said it was mission impossible. Scratch that. It is mission completed.
Carl, you were there in Abuja, Nigeria for this 1-1 draw, which saw the Black Stars through on away goals. What a day you had. Have you ever seen a build-up to a match like that one before?
No, completely not. That was utter chaos in the nicest and baffling way. So Brilla FM, the media partner to the Nigerian Football Federation, ran a broadcast 2 or 3 times before the game advising football fans, saying if you support the Super Eagles, go to the game. But if you simply wish to watch Nigeria versus Ghana, do not go to the stadium, because we don't need casuals. We need the most diehard of fans. We need everyone to, I think the term was, to strike fear and intimidation into the hearts of the Ghanaian national team. Hmm. There was a lot of controversy about Nigeria's decision to have the game in Abuja rather than Lagos. There was another segment where someone said, Abujans are too civilized, or they think they're too civilized for regulation football, and they needed the chaos of Lagos to be the 12th man. But when you got to the stadium, and tried to get into the grounds and armed police, and there was tear gas being fired, and people essentially, there was like a break in a fence, and a bunch of football fans like leapt over and dashed towards the stadium. And you went, well, they love football here. There is no way this game is going to be played at the noise level of a Premier League game, or even like a Champions League quarterfinal. It was going to be something else entirely. Former Arsenal legend Kanu did a lap of the field at 5:30. To the shouts of everyone. And then I think the Nigerian national anthem was one of the loudest things I've ever heard in my life. Just above and beyond any sort of reaction I heard over the European Championships covering England. Mm. It was a different level. The game itself, ambivalent quality, shall we say.
Mm.
And then the reaction at the end was quite remarkable, where a number of disgruntled Nigerian fans sort of stampeded towards the pitch, which was allowed. So the exits are found basically towards the running track, and they essentially allow those exits to be open to just help with ease of exiting the stadium. But a number of disgruntled Nigerian fans, upon realising that they'd essentially been knocked out of World Cup qualification by their hated rivals, rushed to the field, pretty much destroyed the dugout, leading to the police firing tear gas onto the field to disperse everything, while I very sheepishly ran away to the press box and sort of put my face mask on and went, no, I'm not Ghanaian. Listen to my very British accent. You don't have to call me those deeply offensive swear words.
Carl, going through to a World Cup, but also stopping Nigeria go through to a World Cup, can there be anything sweeter?
No. This is the ideal scenario for the Ghanaian national team. Also, bear in mind, this is not a great Ghanaian national team. A lot of the sentiment from Nigerian football fans leaving was, how did we lose to this Ghana team, this terrible Ghana team? I think someone said, Abdua lost us this game. Quite a few Nigerian journalists I was speaking to were saying Osteen Evergwen needs to resign immediately, sort of before he had this press conference. Nigerian fans were calling it a disgrace, a tragedy. Abdul was in mourning. The Ghana football team flew out pretty much immediately after showering. They landed back in Accra at 12 o'clock. So there's an hour time difference. But for them to get back to Accra at 12 o'clock, they basically showered, got on the bus and flew directly from the airport to where they were warmly received. So this is a huge story in sub-Saharan Africa. I expect in the next week and a half, the Nigerian national team will probably have a new coach. We'll probably see the retirement of players like Odion Ighalo and Ahmed Musa, slightly older players. Some like Victor Moses might possibly be talked about coming back in or possibly retired as well. And there'll probably be a big discussion about the future of a number of dual nationality players. Should they get more in, or should they sort of refocus and focus more on domestic talent? So Nigeria is going to have a big inquisition. The Ghana team are not particularly good. There was a point in the second half when I was watching both of these teams and going, neither of these teams are going to get out of the group stage of the World Cup. But the prospect of going to the World Cup, I think, will be good for Ghana, will be good for them possibly attracting more players. There's people like Callum Hudson-Odoi, Lamptey, Eddie Nketiah. Possibly they could go back and heal all wounds with Mohamed Salisu from Southampton and could possibly have a slightly more retooled and a stronger squad for the World Cup in Qatar. Hopefully, I'd enjoy them playing the United States so they can continue that rivalry as well.
Yeah, which you'll have to tell us more about, perhaps when we get closer. Well, we'll see who they get in the draw as well. But not a great performance, enough to go through. But given the fact that you're coming off the worst AFCON performance ever by Ghana, the progress under new head coach Otto Addo and technical advisor Chris Hughton, of course, has been remarkable. Who knows where you could be by November?
Truly, it's only two games. There was a strange moment in the pre-match. So there was an open training session on the Monday and a pre-match press conference. And one Nigerian journalist, who I will call Frank, that's not his name, found a bunch of Ghanaian journalists and sort of accosted them, saying, "You Ghanaians treated us like you were barbaric in your treatment of us in Kumasi. But here we'll be nice to you. You'll have the best food and beer you'll ever have in your life. And then we're going to beat you 4-0. This journalist then went to Otto Addo saying, during a press conference, "We saw you sweating profusely in Kumasi. Will you be sweating profusely in Abuja?" To which Otto Addo went, "Look, this is a serious press conference. I only have 4 questions here. Ask me serious footballing questions. I sweat a lot because it's 33 degrees in Kumasi. Let's move things on." So, yeah, Otto Addo done very, very well with very little time. And who knows what's next?
It's good to hear a public figure admit they can sweat. That's a change.
Very nice. Okay, well, a lot of rice was eaten, a lot of football was watched, and Ghana go through to the World Cup. Also through Cameroon, Morocco and Tunisia, Egypt out after facing Senegal again and losing to them on penalties again. And just like at AFCON a month or two ago, Sadio Mane scoring the winning spot kick again. Thus,
qui a l'espoir de tout un pays. L'espoir de tout un pays. L'espoir de tout un pays, Sadio Mané. Sadio Mané qui va frapper. Et c'est le petit
but. Le Sénégal, la Coupe du Monde.
All right, Mo Salah's kick. Dan, you got a view on that major laser action.
I mean, some of that, I don't know how many of the videos you've seen, but some of them are absolutely shocking. A guy just blatantly standing in the stand, just shining his laser, and nobody does anything about it. It's so bizarre. You got to feel sorry for Salah, but there's also I kind of feel like there's a mini rivalry between Mané and Salah. I know they had a little bit of a contretemps on the pitch once, and I kind of just feel like Mané will be very satisfied with the fact that he's got two over Salah now. But it's a shame not to see a player like Salah. He's not going to be at the World Cup, but I still think Salah and Mane have probably got one more World Cup in them.
Mm. It's not a huge shame not to see Egypt at the World Cup, I've got to say, from a new
perspective. Salah.
have you ever had a laser pen shone in your eyes? I'm curious about what it actually feels like, how intense it is, and whether if you are given kind of carte blanche, as the Senegalese clearly were, to just point objects at him, it might not be better to go for something a little bit more like, you know, proper spotlight, car headlights, that kind of thing, to really put him off his game. Has anyone had a laser pen shot in your eye?
Yeah.
What was it like, Duncan?
It's very distracting. Like,
is it?
Because your pupil, like, reacts to it. So I imagine, given the amount that would have been shone on the Egypt players, it would have had an effect. But like you say, Carlos Queiroz must be kept away from tournaments forever.
What were you doing when you had a laser pen shone in your face? I presume you weren't taking a penalty or anything.
I was trying to get through to the... No, yeah, right. It was in the heyday of the laser pen in the UK, which was what? I don't know. There was a Premier League game that was...
Yeah, that was the heyday, 2000.
Hang on. Here we go. Look. Aston Villa player... Okay. Aston Villa fan shines laser pen at a Leeds player recently, I think.
But what were you doing, Duncan, when you got a laser pen shone at you?
Well, I think it was the time when everyone was getting laser pens, and everyone was like, "Look, you can shine them in your eye." And then someone said, "Well, isn't that bad?" And
right.
People agreed it was.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know medically.
It's the basis of laser eye surgery.
That's not true.
It's not good.
Right. Okay. Meanwhile, in UEFA land, Poland beat Sweden 2-0. Robert Lewandowski with a softish penalty, and then Peter Zielinski with the second to send the Poles through. Sweden have failed to qualify for three of the last four World Cups.
That doesn't sound right. It feels like Sweden are at every World Cup and they always draw with England.
England
that doesn't, seem right.
So apologies, Swedish fans. It must be miserable to miss out. And I'm just bitter. Portugal beat North Macedonia. Also 2-0. Both goals from Bruno Fernandes. So there you go. Cristiano Ronaldo is hoping to become only the fourth man ever to feature in five World Cups. Can you name the previous three, Carl?
I want to say...
Actually, Dan, you this is your quiz. This is your intertotally. Three men to play in five World Cups.
So at the Screen Sports Super Cup.
I can name one.
All right, who's that?
That would be Rafael Marquez.
Ooh, not the one I was expecting, actually. Carl?
Oh, it's got to be a goalkeeper somewhere in that list. Oh. No.
Really?
No.
Duncan?
I mean, Lothar Matthäus is the classic. Also played in Euro 80 and Euro 2000, which I quite like. It's neat.
What? How?
He was named in the squad for Euro 80 and again for Germany in Euro 2000. Yeah, I know. Every time it's one of those ones you're like, no, that can't be right. It doesn't make sense.
Elsewhere in internationals, England had a 3-0 win over Ivory Coast. It was 3-0, wasn't it, in the end? Tyrone Mings at the end. In fact, who were the team who did best in this international break? Probably Aston Villa, Dan Bardell.
Yeah, excellent stuff. I just hope that carries on into the Wolves game on Saturday. Mm. I mean, it's a far cry from it. You do actually forget, it wasn't that long ago Villa were in the Championship, and having players on international duty just wasn't really a thing. And now they've got players playing all over the place. McGinn scored for Scotland. They had the two goal scorers for England. Matty Cash doing really well for Poland. Luca Dean, Coutinho running up and taking. Villa have got Brazil's penalty taker. It's been a massive amount of progress for Villa over the last few years. They had a very good international break. I just hope they're okay for Saturday.
Yeah, Ollie Watkins opening the scoring. As I mentioned, Tyrone Mings finishing it off. Ivory Coast reduced to 10 men after Sajoria got rather harshly sent off in that game. Duncan.
Yeah, I mean, it was England's 10th friendly win in a row, I mean, with an aggregate score of 21-2, which is their longest winning run in friendlies since 1929. So it's like, on the surface, everything's rosy and England are just bumbling along and, you know, they've got an incredibly deep squad of players to choose from. Yet it still ended with a sort of sour note because, you know, Southgate and some of the players were very upset about the crowd's reaction to Harry Maguire, which I think is obviously not good, but I think the reaction was slightly over the top.
The reaction to the reaction.
Yeah.
The Spurs tweet was bizarre. I don't know if you've seen it.
The what, sorry, Dan?
The Spurs tweet. Spurs like put out a tweet saying that our thoughts are with you, Harry Maguire. No player should have to suffer. But if Spurs were playing Manchester United on Saturday, that tweet wouldn't go out because the Spurs fans would be giving him grief.
Do people not remember numerous times where other players have been booed? And back in the sort of 2000s, Liverpool fans would boo the United players playing for England and vice versa. It was, I mean, it's not a new thing. So it did seem like quite an extreme response.
I think it's... Now, obviously, I cover Manchester United, but I think it's nice that the England camp do come together and defend each other in the way they do, right?
Yeah, so, I have no problem with that. It was the Spurs tweet.
This isn't an isolated incident in terms of defending each other. So, obviously, you know, Harry Kane's also come to the defence of Joe Gomez. When Joe Gomez was booed racially in Montenegro, there was obviously the reaction to Saka, Sancho, and Marcus Rashford when they miss penalties. This is just what Southgate's England do. They look after one another. And that's probably why that squad is going to semi-finals or tournaments. Here we are, doing the reaction to the reaction to the reaction in true social media style.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. We'll get your thoughts on that via Twitter, listener. Right, oh, wonderful international break for Christian Eriksen. I feel like he's almost come back better. Is that possible?
Like Darth Vader.
Yeah. Interesting analogy, but yeah. I was thinking more like a kind of, I don't know if you ever saw the wonderful Warren Beatty film Heaven Can Wait.
Oh, yeah, lovely film.
Yeah, that kind of thing.
Also, we should point out Darth Vader didn't come back better, so it's
well, he came back worse in some ways, but also better.
Mm. He did bring balance to the Force.
He certainly was a lot more effective in laser play than, anyway.
I think the thing with Eriksen is he, because of concerns about his health, he's doing less and somehow being more focused. So he's not going to be the Christian Eriksen that ran 10 to 11 kilometers per game anymore. And therefore he has to rely more on his passing ability and, you know, late entries to the box, which to my mind, Eriksen was always fantastic at that. I think I've said 3 or 4 times, one of the biggest failures Barcelona did in the transfer market was when they went for Coutinho instead of going for Christian Eriksen, because Eriksen was the exact sort of player they needed for that time period. And I think, yeah, that's probably why Eriksen is looking so great, because he's just a little bit more static and a little bit more focused on doing the sort of passes that we know he's brilliant at.
Yeah, I was speaking to Jai Harris, the Brentford journalist for The Athletic in the week, and I just assumed Eriksen was going to stay past the summer and do another year with Brentford, but apparently it's not a given at all. So it'd be really interesting to see what happens with him in the summer, because, you know, he's a maverick player. He's still such a good player, and that moment scoring that goal last week was a lovely moment. But the impact he's made on Brentford, he's kind of turned their season around in a short space of time as well, because they were looking in a little bit of trouble.
Well, he scored with his first touch in his first game back for Denmark on Tuesday, his first game back at the Parken Stadium, where, of course, the dramatic incident took place back in the summer, and a lovely goal there, and Denmark looking good. All right, the draw coming up tomorrow. Anything else from the international front before we move on to club football?
I want to mention the reaction from the Algerian head coach, Jamal Belmadi, who, I mean, if you haven't seen the photographs of his reaction to when Cameroon gets their last minute goal to knock out Algeria, it's stunning. So Algeria score in extra time in that second leg, and it very much looks like that game's not going to go to penalties and Algeria are going to go through. And then I want to say sort of within 90 seconds later, Cameroon get that vital away goal, and Algeria's manager collapses to the turf, head in his hands, as Cameroonian players basically mob the field in celebration. And if you haven't seen the photo, I highly recommend you look it up right now, because that is very much one of those, why do we like football? in like the pro and the negative. It just so much emotion and anguish and happiness in one image. He resigned from his role pretty much immediately at full time, saying he couldn't, if you know, his failures at AFCON and in World Cup qualifying makes his position untenable, which I think might be a running theme in some of the African coaches who fail to get to the World Cup.
Fair enough, Carl. Fair enough. Very nice. All right. Well, on to the club football next.
So what do you think about this Jesse Marsh then?
I quite like him. He's American and American managers never get relegated, do they?
That's because there's no relegation in Major League Soccer.
Oh. It would be generous to say Leeds definitely won't get relegated, but if you want generous, try Paddy Power's Bet Builder offer and get money back as a free bet if one leg of your fourfold Bet Builder lets you down. Paddy Power!
Pre-match online Bet Builder bets only. Min odds 1 to 5 per leg. Max free bet £10 per day. 7-day free bet expiry. Excludes enhanced match odds. Eligibility restrictions and T's and C's apply. 18+ BeGambleAware.org.
This is the Totally Football Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network. The Athletic is the only place you can read articles by Daniel Taylor, Amy Lawrence, Phil Hay, James Pearce, Ollie Kay, and the very best football writers around.
Totally Football Show live. Ooh, we're heading your way, Dan. 10th of May, we're going to be in Birmingham on stage at the Glee Club with Duncan and Michael Cox and Julien Laurens, plus anyone who wants to come up and slap them. Will they get a warm reception, do you think, Dan?
It's a tough place to go, the Glee Club.
Yeah.
I was there on a stag do recently. It's a tough place to go. So, yeah, we went. I don't know why. It wouldn't be my choice of what to do on a stag do, but we went to the Glee Club for a couple
of hours.
What
kind of act were you there to see?
You know, I'd had a few to drink, to be honest, James.
I see. I
can't really remember who it was. I think Nathan Kayton was there, big Brentford fan. No football. There's no football talk at all. But yeah, it's a tough place to go. Tough crowd in Birmingham.
Particularly when we play. Glee.co.uk is where you can buy tickets, if there are any available. Right. Ooh, Charlotte Harper of The Athletic joins us now. Wednesday, she was fortunate enough to be at one of the biggest stories of the season, Women's Champions League quarterfinal, second leg between Barcelona and Real Madrid. Barcelona Femini, you will recall, had won the away leg in Madrid 3-1. And now in front of a world record crowd Wednesday evening, over 91,000 fans, they faced their rivals again. Charlotte, thank you so much for joining us there in Barcelona. Tell us about Wednesday, even forgetting the numbers, the crowd for a second. The game from the opening goal, what an extraordinary evening.
It was crazy. I don't think I've ever watched a game like that before. And it was probably one of the best things that I've ever experienced in my life.
Amazing. We were kind of saying just before you joined us, imagine having Barcelona playing in your town and not going to see them.
It was incredible to see granddaughters taking their grandmothers. I met a girl who was 26 and her grandmother had been a lifelong Barcelona supporter and now she's a fan of the women's team as well. Or parents taking their 4 and 7-year-old boys and they've got Alexia Putellas on the back of their shirt. And the whole build-up to the game, the singing in the bars, and it wasn't those kind of deep, guttural male voices. It was higher pitched because the women and the girls were singing as well. When the team bus came just outside the gate, it was absolutely packed. I've never seen anything like that for the women's game, and that was actually really emotional. A lot of people in the press box were crying because it was that kind of event where you thought, wow, this has really struck me to the core. When the world record was announced as well, it was a real kind of momentous occasion that I think there'd always been a struggle to fight for women's sport, to let it make sure it has its place, and it just delivered.
The world record was, what, 90-odd thousand from 1999, USA-China at the Rose Bowl, and this was over 91,500. Also smashed the club record, the record attendance for a women's club game, which I think was in the 60,000s. But, you know, leaving the attendance to one side for a second, the numbers for Barcelona are extraordinary. That's the 42nd competitive game that they've won in a row. Their league record this season is 25 wins, no draws and no defeats. Their goal difference, 131. They've scored 138 and conceded just 7.
Charlie, you know when like Barcelona men are playing Real Madrid men, there's like that intense hatred and that rivalry there. Was there any form of that in the women's game this week?
In the match, the whistling was piercing. When Real Madrid stepped up to take their penalty to equalise, people were putting their hands over their ears because the whistling was so hostile. And every time Real Madrid committed a foul, there was booing, or it was real, like that hungry fan rivalry that you'd get at a men's El Clásico.
The rivalries are a lot younger than the male equivalent, I guess, but we should probably wrap up the score on this as well, because Barcelona, having fallen behind in the game, then ended up winning 5-2 to go through 8-3 on aggregate to the semi-finals. We'll see who joins them there. Paris Saint-Germain already threw after their 2-2 draw also on Wednesday night against Bayern Munich. Wolfsburg will be playing Arsenal this Thursday evening. It's 1-1 from the first leg in London. Juve, meanwhile, will be heading to Lyon for their second leg, taking a 2-1 lead with them. Can you see anybody touching Barca in this tournament?
On the face of it, no. But there may always be some surprises. Lyon have been dominant for the last decade, and Barcelona kind of toppled them last year. But it's the cohesiveness about Barcelona. And I was speaking to the players, and it's the winning mentality. They're like, you know, winning is fun, losing is not. And it's just that hunger and desire and the relentlessness in training and the intensity as well, that the two Wolfsburg signings that have come over to Barcelona last summer, that's what they noticed. It's never 80%, it's 100%. And no one's happy when you have a bad training day. But you just react, and it's the team collective which is so palpable at Barcelona.
Mm. And while the world record crowd has dominated a lot of the headlines straight after the game, it is worth just underlining again, in terms of the football played, it was one of the most entertaining matches that have been played anywhere this season.
Yeah, it had everything. And then Real Madrid went ahead with Zornoza's ridiculous long-range effort that caught Paños by surprise as well. La pelea también es cero, Juan Zornoza que dispara! I have to say, after that first goal from Real Madrid, there was as if a pin had dropped and there was silence. And then it picked up again, and then the drums banged, and then the ole, ole, ole just came through. And then, you know, Barcelona just showed their prowess by scoring 3 goals within 10 minutes and 3 really good goals. So, yeah, if you haven't watched it, go and rewatch the whole match. And I really want to do that as well, because I was so conscious of trying to imagine what the sounds were in my head to put them into words, that you're kind of spending half the time looking at the match, but then also just making little notes here and there. So
The semi-finals coming up in 3 weeks' time, and for Barcelona it will be either Arsenal or Wolfsburg. So yeah, maybe if you're in the London area, Barcelona Femini will be coming to your town. Charlotte, listen, have a great trip back and look forward to catching up with you again.
Thanks so much for having me on.
For the longest time, I thought Lyon were the greatest women's team ever assembled, or probably had the claim to be the greatest sports team on the planet. But this Barcelona team is better than that. I mean, Barcelona women are the best sports team on the planet at the moment. They are New Zealand at rugby, the Harlem Globetrotter style good, and it's a triumph.
Indeed so. Well, could be coming to London soon. We shall see. Men's competition's coming up next week, Champions League. We'll have a tough time following that. More thoughts on that come Monday. Next up, with a dramatic-looking run-in ahead of us in the Premier League, we'll be checking out the weekend's fixtures.
Keep listening for Duncan Alexander versus Lindsay Hooper in the Intertotally Cup, sponsored by Paddy Power. And it's pre-recorded.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard it right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer, if you ask me. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
You're listening to The Totally Football Show in association with Paddy Power. And with Paddy Power, if something doesn't go quite to plan, you can get your money back as a free bet if one leg of your bet builder lets you down. Which is excellent news for Everton fans when they make their Lampardian transition from serious to funny to serious once again. Pre-match bet builders only. Get your stake back as a free bet. Minimum 4 plus legs. Maximum free bet is £10. Excludes enhanced match odds. Online exclusives and T's and C's apply.
Premier League. 9 games to go. At the top, 1 point. Between Manchester City and Liverpool, Chelsea are third. Arsenal looking good for fourth. They're 3 points clear of Spurs, 4 of Man United, both of whom have played a game more than the Gunners. While at the bottom, there's 3 points between Everton and the bottom three. The Toffees with 2 games in hand on the closest of them, which is Watford. Leeds are now 7 clear of danger after those back-to-back wins. Where is Mike Dean refereeing this weekend? Will you have to wait till Wednesday next week for Burnley Everton? Still can't quite believe he's going to be parking his whistle, hanging up his...
He's going to do a Jeff Stelling. He's going to do a Tom Brady. The game needs him too much. Yeah, yeah, yeah. He's going to get a little lap of honour on the final
maybe,
game of the season.
Because he's going into VAR.
Is he, what, like as in Tron or something like that?
He's going to become at one with the VAR. It's never been done before.
Borg Mike Dean. Or maybe it already has been done and he is. Anyway, that's Wednesday when Burnley and Everton go at it. Before that, Burnley will be hosting Man City this weekend because the top two are both facing relegation strugglers. Man City, as I mentioned, at Turf Moor. Liverpool hosting Watford. Jurgen Klopp promising this week Man City a proper fight for the title, which for me made me think, they will drop points this weekend against Watford because that's what happens. But then I looked at Watford's record at Anfield and thought again, because their last 7 visits, they lost all of them, conceding 23 times, scoring only once. Equally, Manchester City have won all of their last 9 meetings with Burnley, scoring 32 goals and conceding just once. Can you see either of these fixtures this weekend surprising us?
No.
Duncan's shaking his head, but as I tell Duncan all the time, betting against Sean Dyche when it's not your turn to bet against Sean Dyche is a very foolish endeavour.
Tough place to go.
It's never your turn to doubt Sean Dyche.
I don't doubt Sean Dyche. I doubt the players of the Burnley team's capability to beat Manchester City.
But your favourite player in the world plays for Burnley football team.
That is true, but even WW is going to struggle against MCFC.
Right. Yeah.
I don't think it'll be a Burnley victory. I think they'll have a nice 20-minute period where they frustrate Manchester City and we'll go, oh, hang on, we've got a title race. Oh, no, they've lost 4-0.
I mean, stylistically, it's the biggest clash you can get in the Premier League. Burnley have made, 66 sequences of 10 or more passes this season. Sounds all right. I mean, I spot Wickham, we've made 18 all season, which is a lower number. Manchester City have made 685. So
Jesus.
It is a different approach to the game. There's no right or wrong way to play football, but But at the
table
same
says
time,
there is.
Well, yeah, that is true. But at the same time, I do enjoy there's a healthy kind of shaven-headed man respect between Sean Dyche and Pep Guardiola. Mm. And I think as long as the right result is reached in this game, I think both managers will have an emotional hug at the end.
Nice. Okay. The other game, Liverpool-Watford, features a return to Anfield for Roy Hodgson, which is always nice. Just remember that he was, for a brief glorious moment, the man in charge there. Very good. All right, so that's the top two. The race for fourth involves Arsenal travelling to Crystal Palace on Monday night. That feels like a tough game.
I feel like both those teams only playing on Monday at the moment. They seem like Monday night football teams, Palace and Arsenal at the moment. They seem to be the ones that are picked every time. But Palace have had some big days on Monday night football. So yeah, you definitely wouldn't bet against Patrick Vieira getting one over his old team.
His old team, anyway. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm. I mean, the ratios, the formula is give me a good football team in the Premier League that's entertaining but isn't in Europe, and then you get a lot of Monday night games. And I think probably Palace and Arsenal fit that the best this season. So,
fair enough. Five of the last seven meetings between these two sides have ended in draws. Interesting that, as you mentioned, Dan, it is Big Pat Vieira against his old side. There's a lot of managers taking on former teams. We mentioned Roy Hodgson and Liverpool. Later on, we'll touch on Frank Lampard and David Moyes. But before we get to that, in other race for fourth news, Man United will be hosting Leicester, against whom they have been defeated in three of their last four Premier League meetings. That's a very convoluted way of saying that Leicester have Man United's number. What kind of Leicester performance are you anticipating here? They've got PSV in the Europa Conference League quarterfinals coming up next week. They have actually put together a decent run of results of late, lying down in 10th place, so the Premier League's not a massive priority for them.
I'm looking at the Leicester squad, circling Wilfried Ndidi's name and going, uh-oh. He is the linchpin upon which many of Brendan Rodgers' quite sophisticated tactical schemes work upon. And also Nigeria. I think Nigeria probably didn't reach the World Cup because he was not fit for those qualifiers as well. So if indeed he was fit, his partnership with Yuri Tielemans would have had me very worried as a Manchester United reporter. As he's injured, I think this probably is a game United will get a positive result out of.
Really? I'm also a bit churlish to call this a race for top four. I don't. This is basically Arsenal's now to lose, and such is the way Arsenal are playing football. Go on.
Is it? Because they've still got to play United. They've still got to play Chelsea. They've still got to play Spurs. So I think there's a lot of six pointage circling around in that scenario. I think I would put Spurs not quite as likely as Arsenal, but I think Spurs are a good second choice to come fourth.
So United aren't really in the race then?
If Manchester United were to come fourth, I think the rest of the Premier League should be ashamed of themselves, in all honesty.
Weird situation at United. We talked a lot about them on Monday's show with Lindsay, but is everyone mentally now on next season, now that they're already interviewing managers for next time around? A one win in their last five in all competitions as well.
It's what's the expensive version of flip-flops on the beach? Not quite flip-flops on the beach. Maybe
really sort of nice flip-flops.
Yeah, a Gucci
on
towel.
On a private beach.
On a private beach. Not quite there.
Expensive sliders on the beach, I would say.
Something like that. There is, you know, top four normally is still there to play for, but I think a number of United fans are very much now thinking of what a future manager could do, who's going to be in, who's going to be out, and indeed thinking about who's going to be leading the line for United next season.
Right. Okay. All topics which were touched on Monday, but Erik ten Hag was interviewed during the international break as plans begin to solidify.
So they should be focusing less on ten Hag and more on nine wins. He won the last nine games and United are coming fourth. So
that shouldn't have tickled me the way it did.
Spurs, who Duncan likes as an alternative to Arsenal, will be hosting Newcastle. Spurs have been very good at home of late. 8 goals across their last two fixtures at the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium. They've also won 4 of their last 5. However, I read also that Newcastle are unbeaten in their two previous trips to said venue, but they did get beaten by 10-man Everton in their last Premier League outing.
Didn't the first version of Joe Linton score the winner at Spurs 1 year? We're now on, I think, Joe Linton 2.0, but when he was an unpopular forward, I think one of his rare goals was a winner against Spurs, and now he's this all-action packed midfielder that everyone loves.
It's an interesting clash in the sense that Spurs, their position in the top six, or the big six, if you like, I guess is most under threat from Newcastle's potential in the next few seasons. And you wonder, you could almost see Newcastle rivaling Spurs in terms of transfer targets over this summer and future transfer windows. So, yeah, it's quite an interesting one from that point of view. And obviously, you know, Harry Kane is in great form now. So, yeah, you wonder whether Newcastle might be in the summer, depending on a few things, whether they could put in a monster bid for said hitman.
Wow. That'd be a fascinating transfer saga to follow in the months ahead. Narrative-wise, you can't say fairer than West Ham Everton, though. You got your Moyes against Everton. You got your Lampard going back to West Ham. And you got the 3 points between Everton and the drop narrative as well.
Oh, yeah. I think this is secretly the pick of this weekend's games. I am greatly confused by Frank Lampard's Everton. A little saddened that the sort of West Ham hype or West Ham conversation has died down. I still think that any sort of wherever they finish in the table, it should be considered a triumph and vindication for David Moyes' methods. So, yeah, very interested to see how this one plays out.
I mean, maybe not wherever they finish, but
in my head, in the universe where we discuss things as, you know, before COVID and the current state, where we, you know, there's yesterday, which was March 7th, 2020. I still think about that West Ham team and how that West Ham team, you know, had only just climbed out of a relegation battle.
Right.
And I think about how, you know, how relatively recently West Ham, the fan base was in, you know, chaos. They were protesting. They absolutely despised the London Stadium, and David Moyes was being regarded as something of a clown. And now West Ham are, I mean,
facing Lyon in Europe next week.
Yeah. Sometimes they're legitimately the third best team in the capital, which is brilliant, I think.
I mean, one of the things this season has been the emergence of the London Stadium as a, you know, as an atmospheric place. The fans have finally seem to have kind of adopted it and settled in, which it's the old brass eye, the one thing we didn't want to happen. Frank Lampard for going away to West Ham. He must be pretty much dreading the atmosphere, I imagine, in this game.
Mm. Everton's record on the road, not the best as well. Lampard, you will have heard, was only the third manager in Everton's storied history to lose his first four away games. And also his players will have to find their bollocks as well.
He's done some bizarre interviews recently. That one after the FA Cup literally did sound like me when I lose at FIFA. The way he was talking about the goals was unbelievable. I found it incredible. Just no responsibility whatsoever. I think he said a random goal, a fluke goal, a set piece. That is literally me when I lose a game of FIFA.
All right. Carl's touting that one as the big fixture of the weekend. But next we'll get on to the one that Dan might have circled in red.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This episode is supported by FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small-town Welsh football club has finally been promoted into League 2 after 15 seasons in the National League. Dedicated staff and supporters celebrate the team's return to glory while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in a higher league. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenge and rise again into League 1? FX's Welcome to Wrexham, all new, Thursdays on FX, stream on Hulu.
On Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Smart Speaker, and now ad-free on The Athletic, this is The Totally Football Show with James Richardson.
All right, Dan, Wolves, Aston Villa, is this a big one in that neck of the woods?
It's probably bigger for the Wolves fans than it is for the Villa fans. There's kind of this complex, you know, I'm going to get hated for saying this, sound like an arrogant Villa fan, but there's not that Villa fans have got particularly any reason to be arrogant in recent years, but all the other Midlands teams hate Villa more than Villa hate them. Villa's rivals are Birmingham City, and that's the game that Villa fans really care about. But whenever we come up against anyone else in the Midlands, they hate Villa and they want to get one over Villa, because historically Villa have been the most successful team in the West Midlands. So it's definitely a bigger one for the Wolves fans. I've never had so many tweets saying mind the gap as I have in the last 3 or 4 years from Wolves fans. I've never really heard of them before, but since they went up, the mind the gap tweets have gone through the roof. But it's an interesting game, because Villa have got a game in hand on Wolves. So Villa go to Molineux and win their game in hand. There's only 4 points between them, and everyone looks at Wolves as having had this really good season. So Villa have still got an outside chance of finishing eighth. So forget the rivalry. I would love Villa to finish in the top eight, and I think that's what Steven Gerrard will want to push towards. So it's a big game in that respect. But yeah, it's one that's bigger to the Wolves fans than it is the Villa fans.
Although you, Dan, and probably all villains will be filled with a burning desire for revenge after Wolves came back from 2-0 down in the last 10 minutes of the reverse fixture to win 3-2 and then celebrated, which we all know Villa supporters hate.
Well, Wolves fans and Wolves players seem to have a lot of complaints about over-the-top celebrations. I think Ruben Neves came out after the Arsenal game talking about it, but I have never seen celebrations like it.
Dan, you seem quite het up about Wolves here.
I mean, considering I don't care about them. Yeah, but their celebrations after that game at Villa Park, I will say that was one of the biggest collapses I've ever seen. I've been to Villa Park a lot of times in my life, and that capitulation was like nothing I've ever seen. So it would be nice to get a little bit of revenge, because it kind of felt like Villa's season under Dean Smith went on a downward trajectory after that game, and it kind of reignited Wolves and got their season going. Before that, they were a team that were creating a lot of chances and not scoring a lot of goals, and they've kind of found a balance since then, and it got their season up and running. But I'd like to finish top dogs of the Midlands, so yeah, it's a big game in that respect.
Okay, Wolves themselves coming off a fixture which saw them the wrong end of a 2-0 to 3-2 comeback. Leeds, of course, Raul Jimenez's red card played a pivotal role in that, and he won't be featuring in this game. Just on the subject of Villa's run, as you say, things took a bit of a dip under Dean Smith, and then he got replaced by Stevie G, and under Gerrard things were brilliant. But at the moment, consecutive defeats, teams stopped scoring a bit. What's going on?
We're a mid-table side. I was at an evening with Tyrone Mings the other night, and he said mid-table's not where the club want to be, but the reality is that's where we are at the moment. So we might win a few games in a row, but then we might lose a few games in a row, and that's it. That's exactly what's happening. I did kind of feel at one point maybe some players knew they might not be fancied by Gerrard and they might not be there next season, because I do think there'll be a lot of transfer activity from Villa in the summer. I think they'll back Steven Gerrard incredibly heavily with a lot of financial power behind him, and I think Gerrard will be able to attract players. So I think in some ways that maybe the players know that they might not be there next season, but I do think it's what Tyrone Ming said, that we're a mid-table side, it's where we are, we'll win some, we'll lose some. And we've had two horrific runs this season. We had the five in a row under Dean Smith, and then I think we won 1-8 under Steven Gerrard. Then we went on a 3 in a row, and now we've lost 2 in a row. So it's just, we're a mid-table side, and that's that.
Fair enough. Chelsea taking on Brentford this Saturday at 3 o'clock. Chelsea, who quietly put together 12 wins from the last 13 matches in all competitions. The only one they've not won in that game was a penalty shootout defeat to Liverpool in the League Cup. They've also beaten...
A draw,
in fact.
Not this again.
They've also beaten Brentford twice already this season, but that was before the incredible Christian Eriksen story came to that part of West London. Will it be more fairy tale stuff from Hans Christian this time? What do you think?
I'm pulling the face. I think this Chelsea team and Thomas Tuchel, I think Thomas Tuchel is going to do everything in his power to make Chelsea as boring as possible between now and the end of the season, if that makes sense. I think his job as a manager is to leave the most newsworthy stories about Chelsea to incidents away from the football field.
Right.
And I think the return of Reece James and other fullbacks will make Chelsea far too good for Brentford.
Okay. They've got Real Madrid coming up on Wednesday. Woof. Also, 3 o'clock on Saturday, you've got Leeds against Southampton. Clash of former RB Leipzig managers, this. And what's set to be another noisy afternoon, I'm guessing, at Elland Road. The verve of the crowd, so much a topic this week, has been a big factor behind their resurgence under Jesse Marsh.
This one's going to be really interesting, because in the goals that Leeds do concede, it seems to come from Leeds players being caught between Bielsa's methods and Marsh's methods. So in the same way Dan mentioned about how Aston Villa, when they were in the Championship, didn't really have players away on the international break, I think Leeds didn't really have too many players going on the international break. So you would expect Leeds to probably have a little extra 10-15%, because Marsh had more time to work with them in training. Southampton used to do this quite often, where they'd always come out the international break a bit stronger, because Hassan will basically just drill them throughout the international break. Although now Southampton players are getting good and are going international break, this sort of bounce has dropped off a bit. So I think in the uh,
in the RB flavoured derby of the Premier League football, Leeds might have a slender advantage just because I think Marsh probably has a bit longer on the training field in the last week and a half.
All right. Also featuring on the training field in the last week and a half, Calvin Phillips and Liam Cooper, but not Patrick Bamford, who's now set to miss the rest of the season.
Will Jesse Marsh have been teaching Leeds players to get fewer yellow cards is the big question. They've got 90 this season. The next highest team in Newcastle on 66. And they only need five more to set an all-time Premier League record for a single season, which feels pretty inevitable with the amount of games left. So we could be looking at the first team to get into three figures for yellow cards, which in Mike Dean's final season is a lovely, lovely touch.
Isn't it, though? Oh, hey, Brighton Norwich. Not sure how you've ended up all the way down here, but let's have a quick check on you. Also taking place this Saturday at 3 o'clock. No team has scored fewer goals at home in the Premier League this season than Brighton. And interestingly, no team has scored fewer goals away from home this season than their visitors, Norwich. The earlier game between them at Carrow Road in October finished. Anyone?
Brighton have never won in April in the Premier League.
Yeah, that's a fact.
And remember in the autumn when we were all going, Graham Potter's fixed it. Brighton are now like scoring difficult chances. They're once again the team with the biggest gap between goals and expected goals in the Premier League. So
there you go.
The same old, it ripped off the mask and it was the same old Brighton underneath.
Yeah, just underline, as Duncan says, they have never won a Premier League game in the month of April. And that was not a statement from me earlier before where I said that the previous meeting between them ended at Carrow Road. I mean, it did, but there was a kind of question mark implied. The score was 0-0, of course, very much continuing on my theme of goallessness. Crystal Palace take on Arsenal on Monday night, and then you've got your extra bonus game of Burnley-Everton on the Wednesday. Good. We'll see how all of that leaves the always exciting Premier League table on Monday in the Totally Show. Today, let's finish off with some Intertotally.
This is the Totally Football Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network.
Intertotally time, everyone. After a brief hiatus, we are halfway through the quarterfinals. Last time out, you recall, Julien Laurens laughed off your PSG comparisons by reaching the semi-finals again with a narrow and typically controversial win over Benji Lanyado. Also in the semi-finals, Daniel Storey, who put out Michael Cox, then survived a narrow quarterfinal clash with Floyd Lloyd-Hughes. Facing Daniel in the semi-final will be the winner of today's Intertotally Clash. Let's meet our two hopefuls.
Up first, the messiah of metrics, the deity of data. His specialist subjects include Vogt Weghorst and passes per defensive action. He is Duncan Alexander.
All right, Duncan. Boards of Canada, they'll be celebrating, of course, at the moment, no?
Yeah, one of the few songs to reference a yellow ball, which I always think is quite a nice nod to the, winter football. So.
Absolutely. All right, well, great to have you back on, Duncan. You made short work of Alvaro in our opening fixture, but then you've had kind of like the last 3 weeks off. Questions perhaps over match fitness.
Yeah, I feel it much like Sean Dyche a lot of the time generally, but also particularly with this because it has been a big gap between fixtures. But, you know, I've been training, but you can't replicate match conditions in training.
Can you not?
Not with quizzing, no.
I see. All right. Well, it's a tough draw for you. Let's meet your opponent.
His opponent. She chewed up Rory Smith and spat him out of the competition. She cheats at Monopoly, but will she play fair in this quarterfinal? It's Lindsay Hooper.
I am hungry.
Are you hungry, Lindsay?
Yeah.
Welcome back, Lindsay. And by the way, what a stellar job you did hosting.
Oh, thank you.
On Monday.
Don't go away too often.
All right then. but no, I thought it was great. You as well, listener. Great. Anyway, now, so you're hungry today and you've had a busy day, Lindsay.
I have. I've been doing podcasting, but on the offside rule earlier.
Right.
I had an interview with Eric Dyer And then I did a chat with Thomas Tuchel for a Premier League event, and then hosted the Premier League event, and then I've seen you. And I've not really eaten, so that's why I'm still chomping.
Right, okay. I wonder if you're going to bonk midway through question three.
Possibly. I'm a bit worried. I think I needed my brain to be at full capacity to beat Duncan, and it's far from it.
Well, let's see. Neither of you have ever been beyond the quarterfinal stage, so we could be seeing some emotional scenes come the final whistle. Remember, it's Daniel Storey who awaits in the semi-finals. And remember, too, that whoever is victorious today wins £10, which Paddy Power will place on the bed of your choice, with the winnings going to the charity of your choice. Lindsay, what's your charity going to be?
Derby Rimmer Foundation. I'll stick with the one from last time out, raising awareness for motor neuron disease, and they're also raising funds to try and find an eventual cure.
Excellent. What will your bet be?
I'm going to be at Palace Arsenal on Monday night, and I think it will make it more interesting if I put something on that. So I've looked, I think, over 2.5 goals.
Over 2.5 goals. Duncan, your charity and your wager.
Charity is the Trussell Trust again, because things ain't improving. And the bet is man of the moment, Christian Eriksen, to score against Chelsea at Stamford Bridge this weekend.
Wow, what a story that would be. Lindsay, you're up first. Here comes question one. Lindsay, which club links Glenn Hoddle, Emmanuel Adebayor, Cesc Fabregas and Patrice Evra?
Can you say all four again?
Glenn Hoddle, Emmanuel Adebayor, Cesc Fabregas and Patrice Evra. Which club do they all have in common?
I'm not convinced on all of them, but I'm going to say Barcelona.
No, it's very much Monaco.
Okay.
Monaco. Question two. There's 6 questions now, so plenty of room for you to gain ground back. Here's a list of Steve Bruce's 5 most recent managerial jobs. But which club is missing? Hull City, Aston Villa, a blank, Newcastle United and West Brom. What's the club that goes in the middle of that?
That's... Aston Villa, Hull City.
So Hull City, then Aston Villa, then somewhere else, then to Newcastle, and then to West Brom.
I actually think Sunderland was before then. Didn't he have a spell, Sheffield Wednesday?
Oh, just beating the buzzer there.
Oh.
Lindsay Hooper, that was big. Question three. Who was the last team other than Celtic and Rangers to win the Scottish title?
Oh, no, this is not my strong point at all. Other than Celtic or Rangers.
Yeah.
Aberdeen are usually up there. Hearts. I think it was someone a bit different to the... I'm going to go Hearts.
Should have gone Aberdeen. Oh! Should have gone Aberdeen. Ooh.
Oh, cutting.
All right then. Question four. Steven Gerrard, Frank Lampard, Steve McManaman, Teddy Sheringham, Wayne Rooney and Sol Campbell are the 6 Englishmen to do what? Steven Gerrard, Frank Lampard, Steve McManaman, Teddy Sheringham, Wayne Rooney and Sol Campbell are the only 6 Englishmen to ever do what?
Score at more than one World Cup?
I'm afraid not, Lindsay. No, it is score, but it's in a Champions League final. Gerrard, Lampard, McManaman, Sheringham, Wayne Rooney and Sol Campbell. Question 5. Could be crucial getting this one. Barcelona broke the world transfer record in 1996 when they bought Ronaldo, or Phenomenal. But which club did they buy him from?
Oh my gosh. I feel like it must have been a Brazilian club, but...
Goofy Bucktooth Brazilian Ronaldo. Where did he come from when he went to Barcelona?
I don't think it was a Brazilian club. Was it? Was that when he was playing in the Netherlands? Oh my gosh, I'm going to go for that, but I don't know. PSV.
Is correct, Lindsay.
I needed that one. I really needed that one.
Wow, how crucial that could prove. Oh. Here comes question six then, to make it a fat three out of six. Which of these teams did Robbie Keane not play for? Coventry City, Aston Villa, West Ham, Fulham and Celtic. One of those is a bum steer. But which?
Fulham.
Is correct, Lindsay.
I know my Robbie Keane.
All right. Good specialist subject to have. Mm. So at the end of that round, Lindsay Hooper, you've scored 3 out of 6, thanks to a fine finale. How do you feel?
Average, which is what the score would be deemed as, isn't it? Average.
Well.
Actually, all the way through, every single time I listen, I've never got more. I've got 3. I get 3 consistently.
Really?
In this quiz. Yeah.
You're like the Roy Hodgson of
Lynn's
totally.
3 Hooper.
Well, with a score of 3 out of 6 to beat, Duncan, you're up next. Here comes question one. Which club links Didier Drogba, George Hagi, Graham Souness, and Tugai? Those names again. Drogba, Hagi, Souness, and Tugai. Which club links them?
Galatasaray.
Is correct, Duncan. Question two. In Derby County's record-breakingly bad 11-point season in 2007-08, who was the only team they beat?
Newcastle United.
Question three, Duncan. Which national team's nickname is the Elephants?
Ivory Coast.
Is correct. I see the look on your face, Lindsay.
Yeah, he's going to get me.
You're level, Duncan. Yeah. This, to book a place with Daniel Storey in the semi-final. Who is the only player to have been man of the match in both a World Cup final and a Champions League final?
Iniesta.
Is incorrect. You're still alive, Lindsay. The dream of a tiebreaker is still alive. The correct answer was Zinedine Zidane.
Heard of him.
Question five. Which team has won the League Cup the most times?
Liverpool FC.
Is correct. Duncan, you're in the semi-final.
I did this just a few weeks ago, so I did know that one.
Ah. Yeah, Duncan, how do you feel?
Emotional. It is a new paradigm for me, and you know, it'll be good to go up against Daniel, who looks pretty imperious thus far.
Well, I wonder how he'll be feeling at the prospect of taking you on, Lindsay. A brave effort, but this is where you leave the totally.
It is. Congratulations to Duncan. I'll be rooting for him, and I also want to know what the final question is.
Let's have the final question. Which of these teams did Andy Cole not play for? Arsenal, Nottingham Forest, QPR, Portsmouth, Sunderland. Andy Cole didn't feature for one of those clubs.
QPR.
Lindsay?
Yeah, I think it might be QPR.
I think it is QPR, which would have given you a score, Duncan, of 5 out of 6. Impressive stuff. Very good. All right, then. Well, there you go. At some point, we'll get you up against Daniel Storey for a place in the final. You're 6 or 7 questions away from the big one, Duncan. Extraordinary.
Yep. Exciting stuff. Bring it on, etc. Where's my agent?
Lindsay, you'll be in that 7th-8th playoff, no doubt, further down the line.
So, won't be as bad as Italy and Turkey, though, will it?
No. Or Sweden. Don't forget Sweden.
I know.
Anyway, Lindsay, thank you so much for being with us, and we'll catch you soon for more Inter Totally Madness.
Congratulations, Duncan Alexander. We'll see you in the semi-finals. And if you, like Duncan, think that Christian Eriksen will score any time against Chelsea on Saturday, it's priced at 9-2 at paddypower.com and on the Paddy Power app. Prices are accurate at the time of recording. It's over 18s only, and please gamble responsibly.
Well, there you go, Duncan. Poof. Hey, and many thanks to Carl and Dan for their patience as they sat through that. It was thrilling, wasn't it? What a performance from Duncan. And Dan and Carl, are you going to be putting your names in the hat for next year after that?
I wouldn't mind a go. I like a quiz.
Wouldn't mind a go.
Wouldn't mind a go.
How did you do on those questions?
Pretty good. I reckon I was at 80%.
Right.
Yeah, I reckon I'd hit the 80% mark there.
Wow. It's easy to say that, though, before you've got, you know, the spotlight and the dramatic
That's
music
true.
Playing under you.
That is true.
Your answers. Mm. All right. Well, congratulations again, Duncan. That brings us to the end of today's Totally Show, listener. Many thanks for your company. We're back on Monday, of course. Not sure who's joining us then. There'll be some Daniel Story in there, though, I imagine. Carl, Dan, Duncan, lovely to have you with us. Listener, you too. Have a great weekend, everyone. Producer Charlie. We'll catch up with you next time. For now, from all of us here, it's goodbye.
You've been listening to The Totally Football Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network. Listen ad-free on the Athletic app and discover bonus content by following the Athletic UK Audio Plus on Apple Podcasts. Find out the very latest subscription offers at theathletic.com/totally. The Totally Football Show is an Athletic Media Company production and sponsored by Paddy Power.
The Athletic.